Welcome back to Local Matters on KTLO. We're visiting again with David Fox, COO of BRMC. Let me make sure I get all those initials in there correctly.
You got it.
Well, you know, David, one of my favorite quotes is the answer to all your questions is money. So let's talk about money now,
sure,
because the financials and the impact of the financials on the hospital, of course, another thing that crosses your desk every single day. Numbers, you guys are constantly looking at numbers. The margins are so slim in healthcare. It's something that's constantly said, but it's worth repeating. You know, you guys have to really maintain very slim margins, and that goes from everything on new technology to making sure if an OR is not operating, you know, you've got to cut loose those employees. When you step back and look at the big picture of Baxter Regional Medical Center with your experience in metro areas and out of state, how would you describe the financial standing of Baxter Regional right now?
Well, Baxter Regional right now is certainly operating at a profit margin that is very slim. We have had years where we haven't had as good of a year as what we've had the last two or three years. And I would say that the challenges that have been laid before us is, you know, I liken it to a family's checkbook, right? And if you are you know making enough to be able to put away about 1% of your total for savings or for future, you know, replacing the air conditioner or, you know, you put 1% of whatever it is you earn annually.
It's going to take you a while.
It's going to take you a while. And that's essentially where not just Baxter Regional, but so many other community hospitals certainly right now are having some challenges. Now, with that being said, we've had years that have been better, and we've had years that have certainly been worse. And so I would say that right now, you know, we're in a pretty good position. Things are going fairly well. We're close to making our budget this year, and we've got a smart team that that is figuring out our operating cost and constantly looking at the opportunities for us to improve our, you know, our revenue stream. And when I say improve our revenue stream, that's those are smart things like improving our coding and things that we can do with what we call rev cycle.
Because if you have one wrong code on there, Medicare's not going to pay for it.
Medicare is not going to pay for it. And that means the whole visit. That
doesn't
mean, like, you know,
that one little test.
You know. So
your medical history denied.
You're so right. And we're such a highly densely regulated industry now that.
And didn't the coding book, like, didn't it used to be like relatively small, and it's like quadrupled in size?
You're sharp. You're staying on top of it. Yes. Yes.
Hey, I learn all this from Local Matters. I'm telling you.
Yeah, more than quadrupled. It is probably about, honestly, about 22, 23 times as many codes. And just to give folks an idea, the ICD-9 code was the previous coding system, which had been in place for a very, very long time. There were around 12,000 codes. Today, there's nearly a million codes now for the ICD-10, and it's just very, very challenging to make sure that you get it all exactly the way it needs to be, so that you, as a provider for healthcare, when you need us most, we're there to provide that care, and we do it regardless of your ability to pay, right? And and then it stinks when somebody on a billing collection side looks at it and says, "Oh, you didn't code this one right, so we're going to deny that whole claim." Yeah. And all we did was meet the needs of the folks in the community doing the right things, and then it's a rework. We have to go back through our rev cycle, have somebody else look at it. And it just presents a challenge. So I'm getting in the weeds for you and our listeners at this moment. It's probably boring them to death. They don't like to hear about that. They want to hear about the exciting stuff, new technology, new projects. But yeah, I would just say we are in a we're in a good position now. The question is it sustainable? And the challenges that lie before us are the unknowns. We simply don't know
what
Congress is going to do.
There's
That's
a lot
exactly
of unknown
right.
coming out of
yeah,
Washington.
Absolutely. You know that. I do, too. We stay on top of it.
Yeah, and you stay on top of it, but then you also just keep your head down and go about your business. Because
it doesn't change.
Because the thought that, oh, my gosh, the goalposts are going to be moved in 3 months. This could go on for 3 years. Obviously, no one knows what's going to happen next. So you just – it's a hard game that the hospitals have to play because, it could all change, but it could all not. So you just have to keep trudging along. Is that fair?
It's fair. I would say our core business is unfazed. Our core business is, providing excellent care – for every patient, every time.
Yeah.
That being our mission, that's what we're here mm-hmm. to do. And so if you keep it simple, and don't get caught up in all the turmoil that's going on around you, all the noise that can pull you away from your core business. Ultimately, that's what we're here to do.
Well, I saw a stat the other day that said within the healthcare debate, I mean, it really boils down to 3.5% of the population.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, all of this.
Well said.
Well, I mean, it's interesting from both sides, but it's something you've got to look at. You keep referring to Baxter Regional as a community hospital.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, that's something, you know, we've always
mm-hmm.
called it.
Mm-hmm.
But the community hospitals are having a harder time than your metro hospitals.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you look at revenue reports from Chi St. Vincent's,
mm-hmm.
like you said earlier, mm-hmm. or UAMS,
mm-hmm.
Baptist in
mm-hmm.
Little Rock, and
mm-hmm.
now all their other clinics.
Mm-hmm.
With the Medicaid expansion,
mm-hmm.
you know, they have fared much better
mm-hmm.
than your smaller community hospitals, and
mm-hmm.
that's across the nation.
Mm-hmm.
Is it simply a case of demographics in the cities versus the rural areas? And the Medicaid expansion was funded with a decrease in Medicare reimbursements.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, is that too simple of an answer?
No, it's not too simple of an answer. Again, you're spot on.
Mm-hmm.
You've answered the question you've posed to me, which is, the larger communities have a larger draw.
Mm-hmm.
They have an opportunity to meet some of the financial needs
mm-hmm.
based on their size and their scale. And the challenges in those larger markets are different. It is a competitive market. They're competing for business.
Mm-hmm.
They have challenges that are different than ours, where folks in that community utilize different groupings or services
mm-hmm.
based on their direct to consumer marketing. They
mm-hmm.
listen to sort of things. They go online. They learn about where things are. In an independent hospital situation like this, where our purpose is at BRMC is certainly to remain comprehensive and
mm-hmm.
independent, remain a community driven healthcare system. And our goal is obviously to optimize, the best care that we can and provide the highest quality of health care for all our patients in this community. That is really our purpose. That's what
right.
we're doing. And I talked a little bit a moment ago about our core business being, taking care of each and every patient every time.
Mm-hmm.
To get back to you answered your question, I would say in this community, we strongly, strongly desire to always remain an independent and
mm-hmm.
community-driven hospital. What we have found is that there are times that we can share in opportunities to visit with other area community hospitals
mm-hmm.
and leverage some of our independence in order to meet the needs of folks in those rural
mm-hmm.
areas that are underserved and not able to be served well. And so, as we desire to remain independent, I think we're going to continue to do that.
Mm-hmm.
It's certainly our board's ambition and mission for us to do that. It's certainly the team that I have joined. It is our mission and our drive to remain independent. And that was, paramount on the front end as I came in
mm-hmm.
from a larger market where, there was a different approach. There was
mm-hmm.
more collaboration and what's the opportunity to get into joint ventures and that sort of thing. So coming here,
it is the community's interest as well.
Yeah, and here's the deal. The BRMC is such a huge economic driver for this community, right? Baxter Regional is, and it's important, I think, in a not just from a healthcare side, but which being chief operating officer of this organization would lead you to believe that I'm thinking selfishly, but I'm telling you, in this community, being the huge economic driver that we are, we want to remain independent for a number of reasons that help this community, continue to provide the best care that
mm-hmm.
we can. So,
why is it advantageous for the hospital to continually be opening clinics? I mean, you mentioned Dr. Elkins and Dr. Moore earlier,
mm-hmm.
both
mm-hmm.
who are part of Baxter Regional Medical Center clinics.
Mm-hmm.
And you see that. I mean, we had a press release a couple weeks ago about a new OB within, the system. I mean, there's all these subsidiary clinics that the hospital's opening.
Mm-hmm.
From a business perspective, tell us why that's so important to the hospital.
Well, I would say this. the importance of integrating physicians, and that means hiring them and employing them, versus the past history where physicians typically were their own, running their own practice. It provides sustainability for the hospital and the medical community. It provides a level of security for the physicians. As a moment ago, as we were having a discussion about the advances on the healthcare industry itself, with changes in Congress and the things that are laying before us, it has presented a huge challenge for the medical community as a whole. Physicians, their compensation has been, in many instances, significantly impacted by reductions in the payment model,
increases in their malpractice insurance.
Absolutely, there's a tort reform issue that's out there for healthcare that, physicians have overutilized services in order just to cover themselves, and that's that's an unfortunate collateral change in practice that we've seen over the years, and it's had a cost impact on the services. So it's also had a cost impact on the medical malpractice. So there's a number of things that by joining a hospital and employing physicians in a clinic, it gives us the opportunity to face the market as one where we provide both family practice and then specialties and even some subspecialties in the community as a hospital system, because we can't do this alone. And we see the opportunity to be able to partner up with our physician colleagues from the hospital side. And, there was a national moratorium in 2008 that went in place where physicians no longer have the opportunity to have ownership into a hospital or start a new, a new hospital, that kind of thing. and there were a number of reasons that was put in place. So, physicians are in a different place and a different time than they were even just 5-7 years ago. And it has created an opportunity for them to partner, if you will, with hospitals and kind of ride out this tumultuous period in our industry for healthcare. Again, the one thing we hadn't really talked about is this transition of care right now that's going on a fee for service over to the quality value payment system that is really impacting many physicians and hospitals themselves. And as we transition from a fee for service, where traditionally you would come to a hospital or see a physician, and a physician would bill for the service provided, that's a fee for service, just like an attorney or just like a CPA or any a physician had the same model. Hospitals had the same model. It's called fee for service. there's a change now. And in a population health strategy, the insurers and the folks, the payers in the market, are now paying us based on our performance, our quality, our value that we deliver. And so instead of that fee for service, now they're paying us based on our outcomes, right? Mm-hmm. And how well we do in the community with providing excellent care for our patients each and every time, which, as I told you earlier, that's what we're here to do, right? Mm-hmm. That's our mission. So, the key element to that is that as we transition, we have to figure out a way to make this business model a success. And so my point being, the fee-for-service model is changing. It changes how we get paid. We talked earlier about the slim margins that we continue to operate year after year. And while we're, while we're doing well right now, well meaning, we're making enough to break even and pay our bills and do the things we're supposed to do and put a little bit back for future capital needs. This is a big organization. This is a big corporation that we run. And so as this financial model changes, we're also changing how we provide care. Population health is something that more folks are going to get the opportunity to hear more about. It is the onus of opportunity that we work with people in the community. Our community paramedic program, which is very strong, one of the best in the nation, been getting national awards for our community paramedic program, where they come out to the home and they provide preemptive care or follow-up post-acute care in the home environment, right? Similar to what used to happen with home health, but now even taking it a step further. Because we're penalized on our readmissions. And the government's
don't get paid.
That's right. We don't get paid. know, we got a lot of
penalized is a fancy word for not getting paid.
That's right. And so the model for healthcare is evolving. And yesterday's model that so many of us had grown up with, where when you were sick or you're running a fever, you had issues, well, you went to the emergency room or you went to see, you went to the hospital for whatever. Now it's so much on preemptive care. Now it's so much more emphasis on the quality of care that you see while you're in the hospital, and medication reconciliation, and post-acute care at home, following up, making sure that the social environment is conducive to meeting your needs. And so we come in, we do an assessment. So so I took some liberty there to tell you a little more about the inside of what's changing in our industry and how it's going to impact us here. Population health is going to be a big deal, and you're going to hear more about it. And I guarantee you, Heather, I'm going to be back on your show talking. Matt Matusiak, our Vice President of Population Health over at Baxter Regional Medical Center, doing a great job. The board has taken this exceptionally and made this an exceptional significant role for us to play in this community for developing population health. I think we've got a lot of eyes on us, not just in the area, but across the state, even probably on a national level, where folks are going to take a look at how we handle population health as a community-driven hospital and how we meet the needs of, gosh, I don't know, 250,000, 300,000 people in the metropolitan service area for 14 counties, you know?
I can't let you out of here without asking you about construction and capital needs. You mentioned that. I know you oversee those as well. Currently, the Hospital Foundation is undergoing a campaign for the inpatient rehab floor, a fundraising effort to improve all of that. Dr. Elders is the medical director for that floor, and we've heard some great stories from him about all the different things that are going on there. Outside of that, can I put you on the spot ask you, in your dream world, what would be the number one construction project you would like to see and the number one capital need you would like to see, be it, technology, new service line, whatever it may be?
Well, that's a great point. Good question. And I appreciate you putting me on the spot there.
You're welcome.
To go back and answer, yes. So I'm going to address the inpatient rehab capital campaign currently. That's a wonderful opportunity for us to continue to deliver excellent recuperative care, rehabilitative care. We do such an exceptional job up on our third floor with that. Wonderful physical therapist, wonderful nursing staff, great physician, and with Dr. Elders and the folks that are in that area there that just provide excellent, loving, compassionate care. And as you know, as we continue to drive that, that campaign, there are needs that still haven't been met, though we had a fabulous $500,000 donation from our own auxiliary, which was fantastic. And then Dr. Elders and other folks in the area and the community have also contributed. I think we're up to around 750, maybe 800,000 now, so we're a little short, but a great opportunity for folks to be able to contribute to that. Barney Larry and the folks in the foundation would love to hear from any of our listeners that have a desire to want to support us in that. Maybe we've touched a loved one or a family member in years past. On the construction plans moving forward, I would tell you that right now we're under the process of looking at a complete revamp or remodel of our space and our entryways to our hospital. It's showing its wear a little bit.
We have two main entryways, but all of us old school people still use that back one. Hallway.
Yeah, that's right.
Side hallway.
Absolutely. You know exactly.
And hop on the stairs and take your shortcuts.
Absolutely. 90 days on the job, one of the things that I noticed is as fabulous as this facility is and as wonderful as things are, we're showing our wear a little bit. We've got an opportunity, our flooring is showing its wear. It's to a time and a point where the folks in this community need and I think deserve the best that we can provide. And so that's a capital project that's laying in front of us that we're just now beginning the process with bringing in some architectural design and some folks that I think will assist us with the right color schemes, the right flooring, durable materials. When you do a large facility like that, you have to look at those types of things. So I'm pleased to be a part of that team and working to drive that. And then for future, capital needs, if I had a kind of a wish list, I would go ahead and be so bold to say that an ambulatory surgery center, independent.
That's made the rounds for a few years.
It has, and I understood that. And I think first 90 days on the job, Heather, I've heard discussions about that, and I would say that that's an opportunity for us to continue to foster and embolden our already strong existing medical staff, our medical community, deliver the needs. Here's the deal: we're servicing 14 communities, right? 14 counties. Honestly, that's where when we do our patient zip code population, where we pull from. Folks that travel to come in and see us from Missouri and North Central Arkansas and throughout 14 counties is our draw. Now we get a few from other disparate areas for a number of reasons, but that's our draw, right? And we've become a destination healthcare facility for many of these folks, and they choose us for a reason. And if we can do things from capital projects that I've just discussed with a facelift on the hospital itself, really making it feel fresh and renewed and inviting and warm, and then an ambulatory surgery center, perhaps some retail space out there where we do we take some retail healthcare and put it in that model, maybe some pharmacy or providing maybe some DME equipment, durable medical equipment, that sort of thing, in that space, and then even go so far as expanding on some of our existing service lines, like our MedSurg, our oncology service line, our GI services with maybe some endoscopy. So when I say ambulatory surgery center, there's a lot of opportunity in there that we could put in that would be a growth opportunity for our future, and I think it'd be something that folks in this community would be very proud of. So we continue to make some work on that and make things happen in a positive note.
David, you got to come back. We got a lot we got to talk about. Half of it
we didn't cover half our stuff. So I look forward to it. Thank you for the opportunity. I appreciate it. It's been a pleasure. So anyway, just wanted to be able to thank you guys. You do a great job behind the scenes coordinating things. Heather, thank you so much.
To all the Fox kids who are trapped in a car heading for vacation and your father's making you listen to this live on KTLO.com, it has been our pleasure to entertain you for the past 45 minutes or so.
Amen. Thank you so much. I appreciate
that. Let's take a break. You're listening to Local Matters on KTLO.